Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is, a free, daily, 30-minute program designed to help you learn everyday American English. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz at the Voice of America in Washington. Today on the program, we report on how an influential Jewish group is seeking to improve understanding between Jews and Muslims. Then we will visit with a musician who helped create the music called rock and roll.
We didn't know that it was going to be rock and roll because we all thought we were doing rhythm and blues.
Finally, you will hear Jonathan Evans' weekly technology report. This week, he tells us about the 100th anniversary of the introduction into the American market of a new kind of cookware.
She discovered that the baking was much more efficient and much more even than baking in ceramic or metal was.
And later, as always, we will present the making of a nation. Every day here at VOA Learning English, we bring you news from and about America and the world. And we tell you the often surprising and always interesting history of the United States. We're on the radio, on the web, and we come to you on a podcast. We are wherever you are. We're the Voice of America. The AJC is one of America's oldest and most influential Jewish groups. At its recent yearly meeting, the group invited several Muslims to speak in an effort to improve Muslim-Jewish relations. Bob Doty tells us about it.
The conference began with a speech by Majid Nawaz. He is a British-Pakistani former militant. He now heads the Quilliam Foundation in London. The group is dedicated to fighting Islamist extremism. The next day, Zainab Al-Zuwaij of the American Islamic Congress told people attending the meeting that, as a girl in Iraq, she was taught in school that the leader of Nazi Germany, Adolf Hitler, was a good man. She condemned anti-Semitism as a serious problem in the Arab world, but said that Muslims are on the front lines of the struggle against terrorism. In terms of condemning the extremism and violence, we are also the first victims, she said. Malian-born Lassana Bathley was honored for rescuing people in a terrorist attack on a kosher supermarket in Paris on January 9th. He hid them in a cold storeroom and risked his life by leaving the supermarket to alert police. If it were to happen again tomorrow, I would do exactly the same thing, he said. Rabbi Noam Marans is the AJC's Director of Interreligious Relations. He says Muslim-Jewish relations is the great challenge of the 21st century. The major difficulty for improving relations between Muslims and Jews is their disagreement over the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. Al-Suwaij of the American Islamic Congress said she has been called a traitor and a self-hating Muslim for her work with the Jewish community, and not only by Muslims, she said. Rabbi Marin said that many Jews are concerned about engaging in dialogue even with moderate Muslims. There is a culture of fear, and a culture of fear can only be mitigated by relationships, he said. But he also says he hopes the Muslim-Jewish dialogue can be as successful as the Christian-Jewish dialogue has been. This year marks the 50th anniversary of Nostra Aetate, an official order produced during the Second Vatican Council that ended the Roman Catholic Church's treatment of Jews as a cursed people.
The music we call rock and roll became popular in the United States about 60 years ago. Rock and roll developed from two other musical traditions, blues and rhythm and blues. Saxophone player Grady Gaines was one of the people who helped define rock music in its early days. He performed with such 1950s stars as Little Richard, Sam Cooke, and Fats Domino. Grady Gaines has now told the story of his life in a book called I've Been Out There. During the early years of rock and roll, sax player Grady Gaines felt like he was on top of the world. He can be seen performing with Little Richard in the 1956 film Don't Knock the Rock. White teenagers loved rock and roll music. Their support helped break down racial barriers in the United States. Grady Gaines says he and his fellow musicians did not fully understand the powerful effect they were having on American society. He thought they were just playing the songs they had always played, but with a few small differences.
We didn't know that it was going to be rock and roll, because we all thought we were doing rhythm and blues.
Mr. Gaines says Little Richard should be recognized for what happened.
He actually is the first one who created the rock and roll stuff, and Richard, Little Richard is. He had funny jokes to tell. He always had something exciting to make you laugh. To be around him, your whole spirit get lifted because he was that type of guy.
Just as he became the most famous rock and roll star in the country, Little Richard left the music business to become a clergyman. Grady Gaines then began to play for singer Sam Cooke.
I played with Sam Cooke, it would be mellow, and I would try to make my band sound to fit Sam Cooke's style.
Mr. Gaines played with many of the most popular singers of the early rock and roll period. He then returned to his home in Houston, Texas, where he continues to perform with his own band. Rod Evans helped Grady Gaines write his autobiography.
I went to Grady's house and I just sat down with a tape recorder, and after researching his life, came up with a bunch of questions to ask him about different segments of his life.
Mr. Gaines says he worked hard to remember the events of his life.
I tried to tell them all in that book as much as I could remember. And every time I read that book, it's just like me reliving my life over again.
Rod Evans says he is sorry he was not able to talk with Little Richard about the book.
Initially, I thought I was going to be able to get him into the book and talk to him about bringing Grady into his band. But his health just declined to the point that he just really wasn't up to doing it.
Grady Gaines is now 81 years old. He continues to play the saxophone, mostly for private parties. People continue to enjoy seeing and listening to one of the musicians who helped create rock and roll. Now, time for our weekly look at the latest technology news. 100 years ago, a new kind of cookware entered the American market. It was called Pyrex. Today, the Pyrex name is well known in the United States. The heat-resistant glass products are still being manufactured, and early Pyrex products are now considered collector's items. Our technology correspondent Jonathan Evans has more now on a century of cooking with Pyrex.
Heat-resistant glass was invented in Germany at the end of the 1800s. But the glass was used mostly in lanterns because the lighting produced heat. It also was used in containers for telegraph and telephone batteries. The usefulness of heat-resistant glass as cookware was discovered by accident. It started at the Corning Glassworks Manufacturing Company in New York. A scientist working there gave his wife a battery jar made of borosilicate glass. Borosilicate glass is resistant to heat and very strong. Kelly Elliott is with the Corning Museum of Glass. She says the scientist's wife used the jar while cooking and noted something unusual.
She proceeded to bake a cake, a sponge cake, in this battery jar. And she discovered that the baking was much more efficient and much more even than baking in ceramic or metal was.
Ms. Elliott says that when Pyrex products began appearing in U.S. stores in 1915, the cookware quickly became popular. At first, Pyrex dishes were only made of clear glass. But the Corning Glassworks soon started producing dishes in colors. Kate Hallis is the owner of Aunt Katie's Attic in Scotia, New York. Her store sells vintage household items to cookware collectors. She says the dishes with different colors and designs are popular among collectors.
It's kind of crazy, but the popular patterns are the pinks, the turquoises. The friendship pattern is a pattern that came out in the 70s that's highly collectible.
Borosilicate glass is also being used for astronomical instruments because the material is not affected by temperature changes. One example is the 5.1-meter telescope mirror at the Mount Palomar Observatory in California. Pyrex dishes are still being manufactured today by companies that bought the rights to this recognizable brand name.
Thanks, Jonathan. And that is our program for today. We hope it has informed and entertained you, and has helped you learn everyday American English. The Making of a Nation is coming up next. I'm Christopher Jones Cruz, reporting from the VOA Learning English headquarters in Washington. We'll be back tomorrow at this same time to help you learn everyday American English with another broadcast, webcast, and podcast edition of As It Is from the Voice of America.
Thank you. Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. This week in our series, we look back at the presidential election of 1976. When Vice President Gerald Ford became president in 1974, he took office during a crisis. For the first time in American history, a president, Richard Nixon, had resigned. Nixon resigned as a result of the case known as Watergate. It involved the cover-up of illegal activities related to his re-election campaign. Lies about Watergate only added to the mistrust of Americans angry at having been misled about the war in Vietnam. After Vietnam and Watergate, many people no longer believed their public officials. Voters rejected Gerald Ford, a Republican, in the presidential election of 1976. Instead, they chose Jimmy Carter, the candidate of the Democrats. Why? One reason was that Ford had pardoned Nixon. He declared a pardon for any crimes that Nixon might have committed. This made many people angry. Also, he refused requests for federal aid for New York and other cities. Voters may have felt that he was not concerned about the problems of poor people. Others believe that unemployment and inflation defeated Gerald Ford. He was not able to deal effectively with these problems during his short presidency. There was competition for the Republican Party nomination in 1976. Ford's chief opponent was Ronald Reagan, who had just served two terms as governor of California. Democrats thought that voter anger about Watergate would help their party win the White House. 11 Democrats campaigned for the nomination. Two well-known politicians did not campaign, but they said they would serve if no other candidate won the party's support. They were former Vice President Hubert Humphrey and Senator Ted Kennedy. One of the lesser-known candidates was the former governor of Georgia, Jimmy Carter.
My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president.
Political experts gave him little chance of winning the nomination. Most Democrats did not even know who he was. Before becoming governor, he had been a nuclear power engineer in the Navy and a peanut farmer in Georgia. Again and again, he told people that he was not part of the political establishment in Washington. He also had strong Christian beliefs. This appealed to a lot of voters. Many voters supported Carter in the primary elections leading up to the party's nominating convention. His victory in the Florida primary was especially important. He defeated another politician from the South, Governor George Wallace of Alabama. Jimmy Carter represented what was called the New South. He made it clear that he opposed the ideas of the Old South, like discrimination against blacks. George Wallace spoke of creating a better life for both blacks and whites. Yet, he had strongly defended racial separation for most of his political life. Many people remembered pictures of Governor Wallace at the University of Alabama in 1963. The pictures showed him blocking the door to prevent two young blacks from attending the school. The Republican primaries had mixed results for President Ford.
Right now, I predict that the American people are going to say that night, "Jerry, you've done a good job. Keep right on doing it."
For example, in New Hampshire, he won only 51% of the vote. Ronald Reagan won 49%. But in Massachusetts, Ford won twice as many votes as Reagan did. The campaign showed that Reagan was more conservative than Ford. For example, Reagan talked strongly about United States control of the Panama Canal. In his words, "We built it, we paid for it, it's ours, and we are going to keep it." President Carter would later decide differently. Ford, in his campaign speeches, denounced extremism. It was clear that he was talking about his opponent, Ronald Reagan. Ford and Reagan won almost the same amount of support in the Republican primaries. Yet, many delegates at the nominating convention remained undecided. This was a dangerous situation for the Republican Party. Party leaders did not want a fight over undecided votes at the convention. They worried that a lack of unity could damage the party's chances in the general election. The situation was similar for the Democrats. Support for Jimmy Carter increased. But some Democrats who did not like him began to say, "Anybody but Carter." Carter's campaign message was that he did not have ties to special interest groups, that he would be different.
"I see an America that is turned away from scandals and corruption. I see an American president who governs with vigor and with vision and affirmative leadership. A president who is not isolated from our people, but a president who feels your pain and who shares your dreams. I see an America on the move again, united, its wounds healed, an America entering its third century with confidence and competence and compassion, an America that lives up to the majesty of its Constitution and the simple decency of its people. This is my vision of America. I hope you share it, and I hope you will help me fight for it."
Many people liked what they heard. Carter won the Democratic primaries in Georgia, Alabama, and Indiana. The other candidates fell hopelessly behind. At the party convention, he was nominated on the first vote. In his acceptance speech, he repeated the line that he continually used with voters.
"My name is Jimmy Carter, and I'm running for president."
Carter said there was a fear that America's best years were over. He said the nation's best was still to come.
1976 will not be a year of politics as usual. It can be a year of inspiration and hope, and it will be a year of concern, of quiet and sober reassessment of our nation's character and purpose. A year when voters have already confounded the experts. And I guarantee you that it will be the year when we give the government of this country back to the people of this country.
Walter Mondale, a senator from Minnesota, became the party's vice presidential candidate. A month before the Republican Party convention, Ronald Reagan made a costly political mistake. He said that if he won the nomination, he would want Senator Richard Schweiker of Pennsylvania as his running mate. Conservatives got angry. Schweiker was a liberal Republican. Some political observers say this is why Reagan lost the nomination to President Ford. Many of the delegates wanted Reagan to then be Ford's running mate, but Reagan was not interested in becoming vice president. Instead, the nominee was Senator Robert Dole of Kansas. Nonetheless, Reagan received a long and enthusiastic response from the convention delegates when Gerald Ford motioned for him to come down and join him at the podium.
If I could just take a moment and I had an assignment the other day. Someone asked me to write a letter for a time capsule that is going to be opened in Los Angeles 100 years from now. We live in a world in which the great powers have poised and aimed at each other horrible missiles of destruction, nuclear weapons that can in a matter of minutes arrive in each other's country and destroy virtually the civilized world we live in. And suddenly it dawned on me, those who would read this letter 100 years from now will know whether those missiles were fired. They will know whether we met our challenge, whether they have the freedoms that we have known up until now will depend on what we do here. Mr. President.
It was a preview of the strong and confident speaking style that would serve Reagan well 4 years later. Indeed, as the future president, Ronald Reagan would be known as the great communicator. The general election campaign started in September 1976. One newspaper said, the campaign left voters feeling sleepy because it was not very interesting. Ford and Carter agreed to debate each other on television. No one had done that since 1960, when Richard Nixon and John Kennedy had several televised debates. Many people thought Ford did a little better than Carter in the first debate. In the second debate, however, President Ford made a mistake. He wrongly suggested that the Soviet Union did not control Eastern Europe.
I don't believe that the Yugoslavians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Romanians consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. I don't believe that the Poles consider themselves dominated by the Soviet Union. Each of those countries is independent. Autonomous. It has its own territorial integrity. And the United States does not concede that those countries are under the domination of the Soviet Union.
Carter responded,
I would like to see Mr. Ford convince the Polish Americans and the Czech Americans and the Hungarian Americans in this country that those countries don't live under the domination and supervision of the Soviet Union behind the Iron Curtain.
The third debate did not have a clear winner. Opinion polls showed that many voters were still undecided. In November, Jimmy Carter won the election. He received 51% of the popular vote. President Ford won 48%. A lot had changed in the 2 years since Jimmy Carter began to receive national attention. Most Americans had never heard of him before. Now, many of those same people had just elected him the 39th President of the United States. A look at the Carter presidency next week. You can find our series online with transcripts, MP3s, podcasts, and pictures at voaspecialenglish.com. You can also follow us on Facebook and Twitter at VOA Learning English. I'm Steve Ember, inviting you to join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English.